Welcome to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast. I'm Rick Samprin. A dog is fatally poisoned in Waterford. The Bulldogs are literally packing their bags. Election interference is back in the headlines. You might want to file your tax return soon if you haven't already. Stand-up funny man Dane Cook joins us to talk about his latest tour and take me out to the ball game. The GMH podcast starts now.
This is the Good Morning Hamilton podcast on 900 CHML.
LPP are investigating after this two-year-old French Mastiff was poisoned and died last month near Port Dover. Extremely sad situation, and now police are trying to find out who did this. Ed Sanchuk is a constable with Ontario Provincial Police and joins us now on GMH. Constable Sanchuk, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks for coming on. Can you recap what has happened?
Yeah, basically what I can tell you is that the Ontario Police Norfolk County Attachment is continuing to investigate an animal cruelty complaint after a family dog died after being poisoned at a Bruce Street, Waterford address. A little background about the investigation, just around March 16th, just shortly after 1:30 in the afternoon, the OPP received a call from the victim advising that their two-year-old French Mastiff named Bane was rushed to a local veterinary hospital where their dog had been pronounced deceased. As a result of further tests conducted by the clinic, the OPP have just been informed that the animal has ingested a large amount of poison. So we are continuing to investigate. When officers started the investigation, they continue to investigate all the way through. However, up until we received the report of the actual ingestion of the poison is when we were looking to the public for their assistance. So we're asking anyone that may have any information in the surrounding areas, you know, Waterford, someone may have spoken about this, to pick up that phone, have that courage, and give police a call or Crime Stoppers to be anonymous.
So where did this happen? Was the dog in its backyard?
It's believed that the dog ingested the poison in its own backyard. That's correct, yes.
So there is literally no chance that this was an accident?
It doesn't appear that way, no. And that's where we're hoping that the public can come into play here, where someone can provide us some information. Obviously, it's very troublesome. I've got a family dog as well. I live out in the country, and obviously there are critters out here. And it's unbeknownst to me as well if people are putting down any type of poison to control that on their property. But again, I know for a fact that after speaking to officers, it's 100%, pretty much 100% that Bane picked up the poison in his own backyard.
So as you're investigating this, does this backyard back onto a park, another street? Can you give us a lay of the land?
It's quite a large property. So we're just looking at the public right now. Obviously, we are continuing to investigate. I can't go into too many details with regards to the investigation. However, we are seeking public assistance with this. Officers did go door-to-door in the surrounding area, but we are asking anyone that lives in the area of Bruce Street in Waterford if they did have video surveillance or if they know someone that has spoken about this or have talked about this recently, to please give us a call. We'd like to hear from them.
Yeah, I was going to allude to the video surveillance aspect of it, whether it's a dash cam, a door cam, some kind of security camera. Has anyone come forward yet?
Nothing I'm aware of. I know officers did do canvassing and originally at the original call, so I know that we've covered off all the bases there. But again, we do have people in the community that will know something about this, and we just need them to have the courage to come forward and speak to investigators. Better yet, if they wish to remain anonymous and provide that information, they can contact Crime Stoppers and be eligible for a cash reward.
We're talking about the fatal poisoning of a dog in Norfolk County with OPP Constable Ed Sanchuk here on Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML. How is the dog's owner doing?
You know, I spoke to him yesterday and very upset, very, you know, this isn't just a dog. This is a family member. And, you know, regardless of it's just a pet, it's more than just a pet. And I felt terrible for the family. My heart broke for this family, you know, speaking to the owner yesterday, very emotional on the phone with me and still emotional about what's happened to his animal. So, you know, it's just we need people in our community to step forward. And to know we want to try and bring some type of resolution to the family.
Do we have any thoughts on a potential motive for this?
Right now, it would be part of the investigation. I'm not aware of one right now. But again, you know, I in 24 years in this job, I've seen a bunch of variety of things. And unfortunately, you know, this is one of them. This is not the first time I've seen an animal be poisoned. But again, there is somebody in our community that does have information that needs just to have that courage to step forward.
Absolutely. Constable Sanchuk, really appreciate the update this morning. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Thank you very much. Have a great day and have a good weekend.
You too. That is Constable Ed Sanchuk, Ontario Provincial Police. What a horrible story. Here's a dog in its own backyard, minding its own business. And, you know, you picture this in your mind, maybe something thrown over the fence or in the backyard and the dog ingests this, dies. And now a family is crushed at losing a family member and is obviously pleading for help with the help of OPP. So if you know of something, have heard about it, and maybe have some information, whether you think it's big or small, give Crime Stoppers a call or call OPP to say, hey, I potentially have some information that might assist in this investigation. That has to be absolutely crushing for this family. And the dog is just 2 years of age as well. Yeah, really troubling story here on Good Morning Hamilton. But you can get more details on our online story, 900CHML.com. And again, if you have any info on that, contact police or Crime Stoppers.
You're listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast from 900CHML.
After being eliminated from the OHL playoffs on Monday, the Bulldogs are now preparing to leave Hamilton for Brantford this offseason. It's going to be the first time since 1996 that the Dogs will not call Hamilton home. Michael Anlauer is the longtime owner of the Hamilton Bulldogs and joins us now on Good Morning Hamilton on 900CHML. Mr. Anlauer, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. Your team played its last game on Monday night, that playoff loss against Barry, and it was really an entertaining way to go out, even though it was a heartbreaking one. What comes to mind when you look back at more than two decades of Bulldogs hockey in Hamilton?
It was quite the emotional game, both from a scoreboard standpoint, holding a 3-0 lead, and then which is typical in junior hockey, which makes it so exciting, and then losing with 9 seconds to go. But it was an emotional time for me, having been personally in that arena, cut my teeth in hockey and management of hockey, ownership in hockey, over 20 years ago. And all the great memories. So for me, I typically watch the game in the press box, and then I actually stayed there a little longer than usual, and just looked at the arena, looked at the banners, looked at the certain parts of the rink where I remember some great plays and the fans and the great memories that that Hamilton had over the past 20 years. So it was an emotional moment for me. It was by myself, and it was that's what I took out of that game, and then addressed the players after the game, but it was a long night. Some of our staff who've been with me for, including our team doctor, who has been there since 1996, took some pictures together on the ice. Like I said, it's filled with so many great memories.
I can imagine. Does the term Brantford Bulldogs still sound weird?
Absolutely, absolutely. I can't. I'm excited because of the reception that we've gotten from Brantford. They've been absolutely amazing to work with and accommodating, allow us to have a place to play. But there's no doubt. I mean, I'm sure many times it'll be accidentally said, Hamilton Bulldogs. If it wasn't a mouthful, it could have been called the Hamilton Brantford Bulldogs. But at the end of the day, like I said, Brantford's been amazing in allowing us to have a home for next year, it'll be strange, but it's going to be like everything else. We adapt to change, and looking forward to bringing a championship to Brantford.
When do you officially make the move to Brantford? When do you have to vacate First Ontario Centre?
I believe our lease ends at the end of June. Typically, our hockey year ends are July to July. I think at the end of the day, the ice is out, and it's out for good now. I don't know. I think the office staff, you have to ask our office folks that. But our players are year-end meetings were yesterday, and pretty much the hockey op stuff is going to, probably get packed, and lots of packing. When you're in the same home for 20 years, you got a lot of things.
Yeah, you collect a lot of stuff. Well, including trophies, right?
Well, yeah, the trophies are no longer in the house, I don't think. I know the banners are. They're tucked away in the corner there of the building, but Yeah, so it's
Very bittersweet, for sure. We got 30 seconds. I know Bulldogs fans are wondering, what are the odds the Hamilton Bulldogs will be a reality once again in 3 years' time, or maybe even a little bit after that?
That's truly up to the city. Like I said, I never asked to leave Hamilton. Like I said, my experience in Hamilton has been absolutely amazing. You know, this building was supposed to be renovated. A mandate was 2 years ago, over 2 years ago, and they still haven't done anything. And it come to my understanding that I wouldn't be surprised if they haven't started by the time our season ends next year. So I'll leave it at that. Don't want to leave on a bitter note. I love the city. I was always told that Hamilton couldn't work, junior hockey couldn't work, by some people in the know. And Hamilton has been absolutely amazing, and we've proven that Hamilton truly is a junior hockey a great junior hockey city.
It absolutely is, and we know that. We know one thing: the Bulldogs brand is strong. You've produced a number of NHL and other pro hockey players, massive impact in the community with the Bulldogs Foundation, and it's all thanks to people like you, Michael, who have purchased the team, made it grow the fan base, gave back to the community, and we hope to have you back sometime soon, but we do know that a lot of Hamiltonians will be going to Brantford to support the Bulldogs. We'll have to leave it there. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And just on one note, the foundation is here to stay. So that's something that we can always remember.
That is awesome news. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
All right. All the best.
That is Michael Anlauer, owner of the Hamilton Bulldogs.
You're listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast from 900 CHML.
The conversations I have with my chief of staff and with my entire government and with our defense and security experts are ongoing. We have been talking about foreign interference for years.
That is Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as we welcome you back to Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML, making that statement as Katie Telford, his chief of staff, is getting ready to testify later on today before the Procedure and House Affairs Committee about foreign interference. And as you heard from the PM, they've been talking about it for years. Dr. Tom Bateman is a professor and coordinator of the Law, Politics, and Society program at St. Thomas University and joins us now on Good Morning Hamilton. Dr. Bateman, good morning. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Rick, how are you?
I'm good. What are you expecting to hear later on today?
I am expecting to hear a very smooth, well-briefed chief of staff address some of the concerns about alleged Chinese interference in Canadian election activity, but I'm not sure how forthcoming she will be. She will, of course, protect her prime minister. That's job one for her. And the second is that she will frequently note that national security concerns prevent her from saying all that she knows. So it's going to be a bit of a ducking action on her part, while at the same time, she wants to give enough information to communicate that she is honest and transparent and not hiding anything.
The Prime Minister has been questioned about this for, a few months at least, and really hasn't been that forthcoming in what he knew and when he knew it, and I'm sure we're going to hear the same from Ms. Telford. It has been a political shell game at times, which is not surprising. In saying that, is it a good look for the government? Because this is a serious issue.
It is very serious, and it's serious in a couple of different ways, of course. Canada is in a position to now have to figure out who its friends are, and we have made a bit of a pastime of being sort of an honest player with many, many different countries, with many different interests, and so we're geographically tied to the United States, but we have a very important trade relationship with China. We have an extraordinary multicultural population in Canada. Many people in Canada retain ties with their countries of origin. So we've been trying to be above the fray in international politics. This issue is going to make that a more complex position for the country to hold. In addition, Parliament is the political arena in the country. The Conservatives have an interest in embarrassing the government, showing it to be either inept or completely corrupt. And I think today's theater will be about forcing David Johnston, who's a special rapporteur on this issue, to try to force him to recommend a full public inquiry. I would say that would be the big thing the Conservatives want to get out of today's proceedings.
Dr. Tom Bateman is our guest on Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML. Dr. Bateman is a professor at St. Thomas University, coordinator of the Law, Politics, and Society program there. You mentioned David Johnston as the special rapporteur. Do you think Ms. Telford's testimony might tip the scales towards potentially that full public inquiry?
Yeah, I think that is certainly something she is aware of, and other members of that parliamentary committee also have that other process in mind. So we'll have to see whether she can lower the temperature on this whole issue, or whether the exchanges this afternoon are going to create some momentum for the Conservatives to press more credibly for a much larger inquiry in which more people can be subpoenaed to release more information about what actually has been going on. And the idea here, of course, is what does the government know? When did it learn about things? And what has it done or not done in reaction to the information about Chinese activity that it does have in its possession? So that's what we're going to learn a bit more about today, and we'll see if we're going to get a bunch of platitudes and generalities or whether we're going to get some specific information on that point.
Yeah, and that last part is a big one, too, because the Prime Minister yesterday, and we played the clip, saying that they've known about it for years. The question is, why was nothing done about it?
Exactly. So maybe Ms. Telford is going to outline some things that have been done about it. We'll see.
We shall see, and that'll be the interesting part, too. Do you think there is, or at least this committee is going to try to uncover some kind of smoking gun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a few things sort of swirling around. One is the Ontario MP Han Dong, who now has removed himself from the Liberal caucus under concerns about his relationship with the government of China. We have some concerns about monies filtered into Liberal candidate campaign coffers, those monies having some source with the Chinese. We have some concerns about the Trudeau Foundation, with which Justin Trudeau has been associated for many years. So there's a lot of things going around. We have unnamed sources in Canada's security establishment giving information to the Globe and Mail and to Global News about Chinese interference. So there's a lot of smoke about, and let's see where the fire is.
Yeah, there's a lot of glowing embers as well, that is for sure. Dr. Bateman, we'll have to leave it there. Really appreciate our chat this morning. Thanks for your time, and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you very much.
And it's Dr. Tom Bateman. He is a professor and a coordinator of the Law, Politics, and Society program at St. Thomas University. I think at the end of the day, we're going to want to know, you know, when exactly did the PM and his chief of staff and the government as a whole know about this, and what has been done? Because it sounds like nothing really has been done.
You're listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast from 900 CHML.
Tens of thousands of employees with the Public Service Alliance of Canada are in a legal strike position right now. And that includes workers at the Canada Revenue Agency, who voted in favor of their own strike mandate a week ago today. The union's contract demands are mind-blowing in terms of the dollar figure when you look at the overall dollar amount. $9.3 billion with a B. Here's the national president of the union, Chris Aylward.
These are not high-paid senior executives. The majority of our members are women, making between $40,000 and $65,000 a year. Not the kind of salaries that can withstand being rolled back.
$40,000 and $65,000, that's not a bad range. I mean, there's a lot of people that make a lot less than that. Franco Terrazano is the Federal Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and joins us on Good Morning Hamilton. Franco, good morning.
Hey, good morning. And let me just jump right into it because something isn't adding up here, right? Because the Parliamentary Budget Officer is the government's own independent budget watchdog. It's nonpartisan. It's not a union. It's not a part of the, you know, a union advocacy. It's not a Canadian Taxpayers Federation advocacy group. It's right down the middle, just looks at the numbers. And the PBO says that the average compensation for a federal bureaucrat every year is $125,000. Now, PSAC represents about 120,000 federal government employees. So something really isn't adding up when the president there says between $40,000 and $65,000. So we'd like to, you know, maybe let's take a look at those numbers a little bit closer here, because for the most part, federal government employees are very, 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 very well compensated.
CTF has done an analysis of PSAC's wish list, and you found, well, you found some creative negotiating items that they're trying to get from the government.
To put it mildly, right? I mean, the PSAC is pushing for up to 47% compensation increase over 3 years. And some of the reasons that number is so big is because of the crazy benefits that they're asking for. I mean, number one, they want more money if you work past 4 p.m. And again, this is for program administrative services. And you know, who that has an office job in the real world isn't working past 4 p.m. But another one that really strikes me is what they call a social justice fund. So they want taxpayers through the government, through these negotiations, to pay money into a union-controlled advocacy social justice fund. Now, they've already used this fund to send members to climate conferences in Madrid and Cancun. They've even used the fund to publish a report advocating for higher business taxes. So to me, this sounds completely unacceptable, right? Canadians have a right to advocate on issues that they deem important, but they should be doing it with their own money, not with taxpayers' money.
You also found as well that for laid off staff, they're requesting money for education purposes.
Up to $17,000. They want up to $17,000 in an education fund for laid off employees. I mean, these are the types of perks, whether it's more money if you work past 4 p.m., money into a union controlled social justice fund, up to $17,000 education fund for a laid off employee. I mean, these are the types of perks that are completely unimaginable for people who are working for a business or who are working for themselves. And all of this comes on top of even other crazy demands, like all overtime being paid out at double time, like 2 weeks of paid time off, or get this one, accrual of 4 weeks of vacation after working for 4 years. You know, how many people have to work their whole lives to get that type of vacation benefit? And they want their employees to be getting that after only working 4 years.
Sounds like a sweetheart deal. And as the federal director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, I'm imagining that you are pleading with the government to not buckle.
Oh, more than not buckle. The government just needs to say no. Just straight out say no to many of these crazy benefits, crazy asks. And not just that, like, we need our members of parliament here to speak out, right? Because it's one thing to, you know, want every Canadian to have a good livelihood. But what we're talking about here is outrageous. What we're talking about is government union negotiators who are trying to do, who are trying to get these benefits passed through the back door without Canadians knowing what's going on here. Because I think if most people, like your listeners, are hearing some of these benefits, I mean, they're just so outrageous. And we also have to remember the context here, right? So many people just struggled through 2 years, 3 years of a pandemic. So many people are worried about a recession right around the corner. But in the federal bureaucracy, none of that applies. You had more than 300,000 federal government employees receive at least one pay raise during the pandemic. That's anywhere between 93 and 98% of all federal bureaucrats receiving a raise. And then not to mention, you have the government handing out hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses every single year, even when departments can't meet half of their own objectives. So you have people who are worried about missing meals in the private sector who would have to be paying huge compensation increases for people who aren't even worried about missing a pay raise or a bonus.
Franco, appreciate your time and chiming in on this. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thanks for having me on.
That is Franco Terrazano, the Federal Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation.
You're listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast from 900 CHML.
More often than not, we need an escape. And lo and behold, this is perfect timing. You'll be able to escape and have a pretty good laugh tomorrow night at the OLG stage at Falls View Casino. Why? Well, that's because Dane Cook, a renowned stand-up comedian and actor, is going to be performing tomorrow, and he will no doubt have you in stitches. All the way from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Dane Cook. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
I am a phenomenal. Glad to see you in Niagara Falls, entertaining the crowd. What can those who go to the show tomorrow night expect?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say this. I have been doing shows in and around that region for my entire career, which it's 31 years this month doing stand-up comedy. And I remember early gigs, probably about four blocks away from where we're going to be doing this phenomenal show tomorrow night. I played a college hallway they hired me to perform stand-up comedy in. Quite literally, I was standing on something that looked like the size of a milk crate, and standing and performing for students as they walked to and from class. So we've come a long way since the formative years, and we're excited to come back and do another big, big show back up at that spot, which is beautiful.
That's cool. That escapism that I mentioned, you know, it's a wonderful thing that you and other entertainers, musicians, athletes provide an escape from our daily worries. Does that linger in the back of your mind as you're preparing for a show, or even during or after one of your performances?
I'll tell you, like, a lot of time, Rick, when I'm performing in real time, I find myself sometimes saying and approaching the gig, much like the audience, it's like, I need this. I really need this. You know, the creative outlet to be able to take material that you've honed locally on nightclub stages night after night, and you finally get to air it out and bring it out and show people around the world. But more often than not, it's something that is as necessary for my health and wellness to get up there and give this everything I've got. The one thing that I love to do, and I never want to let myself down or not give it everything I've got, because just like that audience that's sitting there needing those laughs, I need to provide that.
That's pretty cool. Our guest on Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML, Dane Cook. He's going to be performing live at the OLG stage at Falls View Casino tomorrow night, 9 p.m. start time. Get your tickets, ticketmaster.ca. Dane, which comedians inspired you to become a comedian?
I remember watching Eddie Murphy one time, and I will tell you, you know, Eddie was saying something that was, you know, of course we know stand-up comedy back in that 80s era was pretty unbridled, I guess we could say today. But I remember watching, you know, Eddie Murphy, and he seemed like not only was he having just the time of his life, but he was so concise in the use of words and the use of modulation and the use of improv when the crowd responded in one way or didn't respond in one way. I found myself looking at somebody like Eddie as like the consummate professional and performer. And I will tell you, 24 years later, there I was at a premiere for a film that I did with Jessica Alba called Good Luck Chuck, and who walked up the red carpet but Eddie Murphy.
Wow.
And I did not know Eddie personally. I never had a chance to perform with him, but he came up, he said some really kind words to me about me and my career, and he knew I liked to work with the community. He appreciated that, and he's like, because of that, I wanted to show you some support. And then I'm sitting in the dark movie theater, and the very first funny thing that happened in the dark theater, I heard, and it was the greatest moment to have like this full circle, somebody that was a hero of mine later come and support my show.
You've been in a few Hollywood movies. You mentioned Good Luck Chuck, Mystery Men, Employee of the Month, Planes. Are we going to see you on the big screen again?
You know, it's really about if there's great material, I'd love to work. But I would never sell myself or my fans short by jumping in and doing something that I thought was just ham-fisted and not properly put together. So, yes, I'd love to be doing more film work, but I tend to turn down a lot because I feel it's a little derivative and sometimes not where I've evolved to in my own life in comedy. On the behind the camera, I've got a series that I'm getting ready to direct, and I've got a film that I'm also getting ready to star in and direct. So probably more behind the camera work is, as the stand-up comic tour wraps up, I'll be jumping into something probably behind the camera.
Our guest on Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML, Dane Cook, renowned stand-up comedian and actor. He is going to be leaving you in stitches tomorrow night at 9 p.m. That's the start time, live at OLG Stage at Falls View Casino. Get your tickets today at Ticketmaster.ca. How much of you is in the stories that you share and the jokes that you deliver?
Oh, more than ever. It's and necessary, because we're in a time where, you know, if you're going to be up there, especially if you're going to really swing for the fences and you're going to tell some outrageous stories and some things that either happened to you or from you, you've got to be able to own that first person perspective. I think audiences more than ever really want and demand that. So for me, it's really sharing just that. You know, the new routine is called Perfectly Shattered Tour for a reason. It's all the moments that kind of broke my life apart for the right reasons, and all the places where I thought I had a handle on whatever it was, and proving myself wrong. So I think I probably, at my own expense, get the most laughs, but it is fun once in a while to challenge the audience and say something that's a little outlandish, just to kind of see how that sets.
Last one for you, and I'm keeping you here. Is there going to be a Dane Cook Above It All Part 2? Because, I mean, that comedy special was, number one, so unique, and number two, extremely funny.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, we're actually editing it right now. The two nights that I had the privilege of working with the great Marty Kullner, who directed the special. He also directed Vicious Circle, an isolated incident that I did in my career. We did enough material over those two nights that the whole purpose was, if the first one works and we feel like we captured lightning in a bottle, then let's put together that second night of material. So probably in the summer, if people want to check out danecook.com, they can follow suit and see the new stuff when it drops.
That is wicked. I also encourage our listeners to go to Ticketmaster.ca, get your tickets for tomorrow night's Dane Cook Live at the OLG Stage at Falls View Casino. Dane, thanks for the time. Best of luck. Break a leg tomorrow night.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
Should be a great show. Again, Ticketmaster.ca for your tickets and more on Dane Cook. Go to his website, danecook.com.
You're listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast from 900 CHML.
Great time to be at the ballpark. If you've managed to find yourself at Rogers Center over the last couple of days taking in Jays Tigers, I'm sure you enjoyed that the roof was open and the Jays have been playing some pretty good baseball. There is, however, one particular seat at Rogers Center. Even though it's gone through $300 million in renovations this offseason, there's one seat at the Dome that's not very good. In fact, it finds itself on the worst seat in baseball list. Now, this was compiled by the folks at bookies.com. They put together an algorithm that identified the worst seat at Major League Baseball stadiums. And some of them, many of them really, offer shocking views, if you can even call it a view. And yeah, Rogers Center is on the list. In fact, its seat, its worst seat, is in the bottom five, or the top five, however you want to look at this list. Bill Spiros is an award-winning journalist and editor at bookies.com and joins us now on Good Morning Hamilton on 900 CHML. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Hey, always happy to be up early in the morning to talk baseball and gambling. I was telling your producer, you set a record. This is the first time in the history of radio that any show's ever had back-to-back natives of Arlington, Massachusetts on his show.
We're happy to do so.
Dane is our most famous resident, and I could be the most infamous one, since I write about gambling for a living.
Well, we're happy to have you on board. How was this list compiled?
Well, last year, heading into the All-Star break, you know, everybody's always looking for different things to do. And growing up a Red Sox fan, I was well acquainted with and a Bruins Celtics fan as well, the old Boston Garden. Between the old Boston Garden and Fenway Park, I was well acquainted with obstructed view seats, structural poles. At the old Garden, there would be seats in the second level where the overhang would block half the ice. You know, so I decided to, you know, oh, what would be the worst seats in each ballpark? And, you know, a lot of these things are always subjective. So what we did was I came up with some data points and assigned each a value. And I spent a couple of weeks, you know, I've been to about 10 current parks, and I've been to about 10 parks that are no longer with us. You know, so I thought, you know, what are the important things when you buy a ticket, aside from price? Obviously, the view. I mean, can you see the action? Is there a good angle? Are you obstructed? How far are you from the plate? That obviously plays into it, since 90% of the action is the pitcher and the catcher. The angle of the seat. You know, there are seats in Fenway that face left field, that face the bleachers. And then there's the element issue, which obviously isn't a concern for Rogers Center and most parks. You know, so I scored that neutral for a place like Rogers Center, because the roof's going to be closed. And then there were the other two issues: proximity to concessions and restrooms, you know, how far do you have to go to get a beer, and how far do you have to use the restroom, and then overall comfort. I mean, there are some ballparks where seats are very comfortable, and then there's Fenway Park, which has seats built for like people with rickets in the 1930s. So I assigned a point value to all those, and then went through. What's really nice is, even though you can't get to every, well, I couldn't get to every park, most team websites have the software now where you could see the view from your seat. So, you know, I basically started looking at sections, like, okay, what section would meet the criteria? And in the case of Rogers Center, I looked at that section in deep left field, 540, and there was the foul pole. So you have the you have a good combination there of distance and potential obstruction. And so it basically came down to trying to plot which seat had the foul pole between, like, covering the plate or the pitcher's mound. And I happened to find that one particular seat where, because of the angle of the fair foul line and the pole, the seat, the view of the plate, you have to look through the foul pole, and plus you're, you know, I don't know how many feet or meters away from the plate you are. So that was a good combination of like all of the bad things.
Yeah, that's so that seat at Rogers
sort
Center.
Sort of scored low because of that.
Yeah, that seat at Rogers Center, you had a score of 21 out of 60. 60 out of 60 would be perfect. That's section 540, row 11, seat 23, which, by the way, is $34. The worst seat on your list, and this is probably, you know, could be the worst seat in all of sports. We're approaching the 111th anniversary of the first game at Fenway Park, and while that facility steeped in history has all world charm, all sorts of character, it also has the worst seat in the big leagues with a lowly score of 17 out of 60. Tell us about this horrible seat.
Well, of course, you know, as I say in the story, it's not just the worst seat in baseball. It's the first seat in baseball. It's section one, row one, seat one at the oldest ballpark in the majors, and actually the oldest continual baseball stadium in North America, believe it or not. So, yeah, there's a lot of irony there. Of course, this year, every seat in Fenway is the worst seat in baseball because you're watching the Red Sox, who are terrible. And I can say that because I'm a Red Sox fan. So, you know, that's an irony there, that, you know, that number, you know, that little numeric poetry comes back. Because, yeah, if you've ever sat in that seat, and I have sat in that seat, you're looking, the pole, we call them poles, they're steel girders. The pole pretty much covers, like, your field of vision is 180 degrees. The pole might cover 45 degrees, and that 45 degrees is the pitcher's mound and the plate. So, you know, it's a terrible seat.
It is.
I actually got a tweet from someone who used to have tickets there, and they made up T-shirts that said section one, there are no good seats. And it was a picture from that seat. And the guy turned it into a T-shirt, which was like the craziest and most awesome thing I've ever seen.
Well, we only got 20 seconds, Bill. I do want to ask you a betting question because you're at bookies.com. Tampa Bay roaring out to a 13-0 record. How has that improved their World Series odds?
Well, the Rays were mid, I'd say maybe 15-1, 10 to 15 to 1 when the season began, and they're down to about 9 to 1 right now.
Wow! So they made
it certainly helped. You know, that's a tough division, and you know, if you can get out of the AL East and avoid a wild card, which they're obviously headed to do, avoid that first round. That's going to help. And I think a lot of people in the betting markets have taken notice of the depth and strength of their pitching.
Absolutely. Bill, we got to run. Yeah, we got to run. I appreciate your time today. We're short for time, but enjoy the weekend and the rest of the baseball season.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Bill Spiros, award-winning journalist and editor at bookies.com. You can check out the story on that website.
Thanks for listening to the Good Morning Hamilton podcast. You can listen to the show live weekday mornings from 5:30 to 9 on 900 CHML and online at 900CHML.com.
The Good Morning Hamilton podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your favorite podcast. I'm Rick Samprin. Thanks again for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. It's free, so you never miss an episode. And make sure you rate and review.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.